In 2007, the Babylon podcast was our last best hope for more Lost Tales. We thought it failed. But after WonderCon, it became something more. Our last best hope for more Lost Tales geeking. The year is 2008. The name of the show is the Babylon Podcast. And welcome back to another Babylon Podcast. I am Summer Brooks.
I'm Tim Callender.
And I'm Brad Boyer.
Yes, our intrepid...
Jeffrey Willis will be played by Brad Boyer.
Yes, our intrepid editor and audio cleanup engineer extraordinaire, Brad Boyer, has stepped in for Jeffrey because Jeffrey is under the weather. And this is actually really cool because today's Brad's birthday.
Happy birthday.
We have to find, like, a non-royalty-related happy birthday song. Is there a Filk happy birthday song out there we can use?
Happy birthday.
If there is, I haven't found it yet.
Happy birthday. Doom and gloom and dark despair. People dying everywhere. Happy birthday.
Is that the Cthulhu
happy
version?
Birthday.
I think so. Ah. Anyway, we are Jeffreyless, but we have our intrepid editor here with us. And I think, Tim, you said you had some additional news from the...
Yeah, I've got some news here from the world of JMS. Just kind of a couple of things on the JMS news group came through the Babylon Podcast Gmail account. Couple things here, and one of them is Babylon 5 related. A couple things aren't, and we'll start with the things that aren't. Someone had written into the news group asking about Jeremiah.
Ooh.
And commented that the last episode of the series, Interregnum,
mm-hmm.
Part 2, it says it certainly didn't have a cliffhanger like the first season did. Did you plan to keep the storyline going, or did you write it knowing it was going to be the last episode? And JMS' response was, I knew that this was a show I wasn't going to come back to under any conditions. So, yeah, it was meant to be a finale from my side. So, all you Jeremiah fans out there, it's a little news. Something else that did a little digging, because this was sort of a JMS day. World War Z, apparently the script has been finished, and the rights have been acquired by Brad Pitt's production company. But from what I could see, no director has yet been signed to helm the project. But from what I've, you know, how the rabbit hole that the World Wide Web can become following links, apparently someone from Ain't It Cool News managed to read the initial draft that Straczynski wrote, and words like Oscar-worthy and genre-defining were tossed about.
Ooh.
In the wake of that, so...
Cool.
Yeah.
And why can't I ever get my hands on this cool stuff ahead of time?
You're just not cool enough, I guess, Summer.
I'm going to have to work on that.
I don't know. I'm curious how people, you know, how people generally get a hold of that. I did see a non-review of an interview with Kevin Smith, who apparently saw a movie he could not talk about. But in this interview, he mentions that in this movie, the stars, they do a lot of trekking. and then went on to say that this movie that he cannot talk about is absolutely fantastic.
Interesting.
So, and says that the guy who's the lead in it does a fantastic job. He will be a star, and that he has a very difficult role to fill, considering that his role is one that was played by one guy quite a lot.
Wow, he's not really good at being subtle with the veiled information, is he?
Well, the host in the interview asked him, so does he out Shatner? He goes, I don't know what you're talking about. So So, anyways, let's see. Back to Straczynski Land. This is a follow-up now. This is the elucidation part. Regarding the whole situation with no more further lost tales, et cetera, et cetera. This is what Straczynski says. He writes, "For those who wondered why $2 million for a two-hour movie was low when we used to do B5 for $850,000 an hour, first, that was 10 years ago, mm-hmm. and costs across the board have gone way up. Second, we could amortize costs across a season of 22 episodes, which you can't do for a standalone, meaning you want a given set that costs $100,000 to build. You spread that cost across 22 episodes and it is small. You can also spread other hard costs across that period. And a standalone, you have to pay for everything out of that one budget. And on top of that, scale for two-hour salaries for crew and cast are higher per hour than a one-hour production." So, just some hard facts. I wish Jeffrey was here, because I know he has something to comment about that, positively or negatively. I don't know, but he's our insider, so he'll be able to corroborate that, I'm sure. So anyways, there we go. That, I think, has something to do with Straczynski's, you know, feature film or nothing position.
I wish he could give us some news on whether or not MGM's ever going to put season two of Jeremiah out on DVD.
Well, I don't know.
Alas.
I mean, you'd think in this day and age, most everything ends up in DVD.
You think, but they released season one, 4 years ago, and season two is nowhere to be found?
I don't know.
Kind of annoying.
Could be hung up in rates.
I think I went up myself.
Oh, well. Is that it for the commentary on the Hollywood state of affairs today, as seen from the eyes of a couple of longtime B5 fans?
Yeah, I think that's about it. Oh, one last news. There was nothing else I could find regarding the Lensman movie, so no news on that front. Very disappointing.
I am curious to see what JMS does with Zombie Apocalypse, so that could be fun. Anyway, that'll do it for our right this second. We'll take a very, very short break and come back with deep geeking on
lines of communication.
There you go.
That's right. Yo, what's up?
It's Demi
and NG. We're here to rep our podcast, the company. It's all about heroes. That show really rules. And we be spitting so much fire, we make others look like fools. I know we be rapping like it's 1995.
But seriously, please listen to our show.
Yeah, www.thecompanypodcast.net.
Yes, it is that website. Thank you.
And quit talking that jive.
On the next Babylon 5.
They are laying a foundation for another assault.
As the Mars Resistance struggles to survive,
Clark's forces will keep closing in on you.
Unless something is done.
Sheridan and Delenn are about to discover.
Who are you?
What the shadows left behind.
All ships, attack formation.
They're locking on.
The revenge of Zahadoom.
Yes.
On the next Babylon 5.
Digging down into the most obscure facts and fandom, this is
And we're here, gathered here today to discuss lines of communication.
Look, I've got a horrible confession to make.
Uh-huh.
I watched this episode, and you know what? I didn't remember any of it.
Really?
Yeah, you know, it's like, I don't know what it is. It's one of those in my, you know, repeated viewings of B5 has just fallen through the cracks. And I don't say that because this is a horrible episode.
It's just not one that you went out of your way to rewatch.
Right, exactly. So I'm sitting here watching, and it's like going, God, I don't remember any of this.
Really?
Yes.
None of it?
None of it.
That's kind of surprising for Tim.
I know it. That's why, in interest of full disclosure and honesty, because the truth will out.
Huh.
So, you know,
How would you explain that? I mean, if you have no memory of it, did you ever see it at all?
Well, you know what? I wonder that. I really wonder if that happened, because I know there was a period in time around the fourth. Well, all right. You want the horrible confession?
Sure.
If I remember rightly, I was engaged in some extracurricular activities while this one was on. Let's put it this way. You remember number one's last line in the episode?
Yeah.
I think it was that sort of thing.
Okay. No problem.
Yeah. So, what can I say? A bird in the hand is worth two on the TV, I guess.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So, anyway.
I am just, it just, you know, you having, it's rare because you're literally watching an episode with fresh eyes.
Yeah.
After
yeah.
this long. Interesting. Well, let's get to the quick overview first. Sheridan is getting a little bit upset at the, what's the word I'm looking for? Biased reporting that ISN is presenting to its viewers.
I like Ivanova's, her comments about it. It's like, you know, why are you watching that stuff? It just gets you riled up. You know, I mean, his excuse of gathering intelligence is completely bogus. You know?
Well, no, it is not completely bogus. He wants to know what they're saying about him this week, so he knows how to possibly counter, you know, so he won't be blindsided by stupidity from other quarters.
Yeah, but you know what? The thing is, it's not any different than they've been playing since they did that that report. It's the same thing about Minbari War Syndrome and how our great hero has been led astray by alien influences. Mm-hmm. If there's anything new, it's the whole bit that aliens are oppressing humans on the station. But, you know, I'm with Ivanova. It's just there to get him cranked up. You know, he just wants to get cranked up.
Yeah, it's a time-honored tradition. If you tell a lie enough times, people will eventually believe it's the truth. So therefore, keep telling the lie.
Right. Well, that's true. Wait.
But I just love her the scene where he wakes her up because he's got an idea, and it's like,
couldn't
have waited until morning.
Right. Not even a nice outfit, Ivanova. Oh, yeah, nice outfit. You know, we touched on this last week with Racing Mars, and this week, it really, there's just something human about that. You know, even in the midst of embargoes and breaking away from Earth and not knowing what's going to happen tomorrow. It could be the end of them all. You know, who knows? There's still this great sense of humor that runs through the show, and I really love that. It really keeps it lively and fresh.
What else
are they going to do?
Yeah, I thought you were going to talk about the running theme of no one getting a complete solid night's sleep.
Well, there's that.
Which seems to have been life or art imitating life in the terms of JMS writing everything.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, I really enjoyed that. One of the things that really struck me watching this was the subtlety in Boxleitner's performance. You know, there are a number of moments where it's just him reflecting on something someone said or something that has been on ISN, but he manages to convey those thoughts just simply through his expression. You know, that moment just before he barges in on Ivanova in the middle of the night, you know, you can see him, you know, he's got that his jaws locked as he's just, you know, getting cranked up about this. And then he starts thinking, you can just see in his eyes, what can I do about this? And then when it hits him, you know, the eyes light up, you know, his whole demeanor changes. I really enjoyed watching that.
And I wonder what the scene would have played like if Sheridan had managed to drag her out of her room, still in her robe. No, 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 come on, you've got to go. Just I sitting there watching that going, you know, that would have been actually kind of funny.
Yep. And, you know, and the humor continues. They go into the war room, which is generally in, you know, disuse now that the Shadow War is over. You know, and Ivanova's comment is like, you know, I've been here before.
I'm not impressed. You woke me up for this?
Right, yeah. Right. But that's when he springs it on her that they're going to come up with the voice of the resistance to counteract the propaganda, war.
And literally the one thing that surprised me was that it took them this long to do that.
Yeah, you know, I think part of it was they were just sort of depending on the fact that they knew it was all bullshit. So everybody else must know it too. And I think it's just one of those, it slowly dawned on them that wasn't the case.
Because
I really think that's what it was. It's like, you know, they were just so wrapped up in, you know, the emergency of the moment that they didn't think of those sorts of things. And I think that's one of the things about this episode that is worth commenting on. This is one of those shows where, you know, Sheridan sees it, Delenn, of course, comes face to face with it, where matters left unattended have become poisonous things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe that's the theme of it. I don't know. You know, and you can extend that metaphor to the resistance on Mars, for that matter, as well.
Mm-hmm. And Brad, you were saying something?
They should have started a podcast.
But yeah, they should have. Except with iTunes under the thumb of ISN.
How do you start up a renegade iTunes store to get your message heard?
Same marketplace?
And think of how... Do people still trade in Grateful Dead data crystals in that day and age? You gotta wonder. Anyway.
I don't know.
But no, it's like when it really was that the idea of putting out their own message at that time, that hadn't come up before then, was a surprise to me, because even after watching the ISN report, it wasn't until then that they knew they were blindsided. No problem. They should have been more proactive, I guess, when they realized that Clark was going to come after them, because he's afraid. It's like his shadow support disappeared. Mm-hmm. It's because of Babylon 5 that went away, and oh my God, they're not busy anymore, so they're going to come after me. What can I do? And after that ISN report came out, they should have, I don't know, that maybe that should have been an idea. Maybe trying to get, you know, the idea should have come up, I think, when he thought about sending representatives to Mars to get them to sign on to fight Clark. How else to get messages to them? Broadcast it to everybody. But better late than ever.
Yeah, and I think in terms of, you know, telling the story, I don't think that's necessarily a defect on the part of storyteller.
No, it's not at all. It's more of a pacing and plot thing. Why didn't somebody think of this earlier?
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, and I would have gone so far as to say it's a refreshing foible of our characters. In other words, they're the heroes, but they're not perfect. They don't have the immediate answer to everything. You know,
I think
it takes them a while to figure it out.
Yeah.
Oh, wait a minute.
Yeah. I think I would like to go back and check the timeline to figure out exactly how long it was between the end of the Shadow War and the ISN team coming on, and how long between the ISN team coming on and the report actually airing, and how long they were just poking at him until he finally said, okay, enough, it's my turn. I mean,
I think Ivanova mentions, at least, that, you know, in the episode once the report aired, that they've been, you know, if I recall correctly, it's been a few weeks that they've been airing the stuff. You know, now that doesn't, you know, address the earlier points of the timeline, like you say, you know, how long it, since, you know, once they came on the station, how long in production before it was finally broadcast, I don't know.
Okay, so this is only a couple of weeks after the initial broadcast. Gotcha. All right, that satisfies my nitpicky side for now.
On the other hand, you know, Delenn comments on the speed at which humans get things done after she comes back with her from a Drak adventure. I'm gone for 3 days and you redecorate the place.
Well, actually, that's common. Once, you know, humans put their mind to doing something, it gets done. It's just, you know, getting up the energy to actually choose to do something.
right. Getting everybody on board with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With those organizational board meetings and everything. But yeah, the
speaking of the board meetings.
Yes.
Yeah, I liked, again, the whole Mars thing was a lot of fun to watch. I think where in the previous episode, I think Marjorie Moynihan, I can't pronounce her last
Monahan.
Name. Thank you, Monahan. Her performance as number one seems a little stiff. This time, it seemed more like steel when she rips Philippe a new one after unauthorized set off the bomb and killed 10 civilians. And she just, you know, they drag him in and her cohorts want to stick around. She's like, get out of here. No, this is between me and him. And then, she proceeds to tear him apart.
I believe the phrase you're looking for is eviscerated with prejudice.
Yes. And his comment is how you treat all your ex-lovers? But yes, it is.
That part was funny.
Yes, yes.
Seeing how angry, how passionate she got about the fact that civilians were killed. And, you know, seeing that her whole thing is just attacking the system that's oppressing them and not invoking any collateral damage whatsoever, she is a lot like Sheridan in that way.
Yeah.
And I thought that was well played, where, you know, she didn't care about the bombing, but it was like, until it was, okay, civilians died, wait, heads will roll.
And that, I think, you know, touches on the dilemma of the freedom fighter. You know, at what point are you striking a blow against the empire, and at what point are you just simply descending into terrorism? And you get the sense that number one draws that line at a particular place, and the Philippe character drew it at another. And it might simply be, it might have been just as simple as she comments, you know, he's from Earth. Apparently he's there as a contact from Earthside Resistance. And, you know, he says he saw a target of opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and her whole point is, no, there are no targets of opportunity. You have to plan it. You have to make sure, you know, because otherwise we completely blow our credibility.
Yep.
So, you know, and Franklin, with his impassioned speech, is that they get all the cell leaders together. Says, you know, we're on your side. You have to understand that. We have to put aside differences from the past and pull together. You know, we'll give you a target, but you got to do it our way.
And I like how the fact that, well, we haven't seen any support from B5 this past year. Hello, been busy, could have died.
Yeah, right.
All of you could have died if we hadn't won.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. It's similar to the conversation they had with Captain Jack previously. It's like, war, what war?
Mm-hmm.
and I think Franklin even comments to Marcus, you know, I thought the Ranger, you know, the life of a Ranger was the thankless lot. It's like, yeah, but I'd like somebody to at least give me a pat on the back once in a while. Yeah, great stuff. The other thing I really liked is we really see the relationship between Franklin and Marcus blossom. Their interaction, now, you know, as we know from talking with Jason Carter, he and Richard Biggs had a great relationship, but I think here, you know, in these episodes, and especially in a couple scenes and lines of communication, you really get the sense of the rapport that they have.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the one scene I'm thinking of where Marcus is telling Franklin, you know, I think number one's got the hots for you.
Yeah.
You go for it. I'll bet you 50 credits, you know. And I mean, this is kind of this restrained thing. When she invites him to dinner and then says, Marcus, I guard duty. The first thing he does is turns around, you owe me 50 credits. But there's just something so natural about it, you know. I mean, it's like, come on, pay up, you cheap bastard.
It's like, oh, no, you owe me 50 credits right now. Come on, pay up. You didn't believe me. Come on.
Yeah.
That was amusing. And then at the very end, you see Marcus on guard duty.
Playing with his pipe.
Overhearing. Passion.
Yeah, oh, Steven. Oh, my God. Yeah, there's nothing Freudian in that whole fighting pole thing, is there?
But you know what? It's a cool weapon. I would like someone to make a replica, because that would I would like that.
I could see you swinging one of those around.
Oh yeah, could have some fun with that. But yeah, now, the Delenn excursion.
Yes, and this is about the point where I realized, wait a minute, I don't think I've seen this episode because I kept waiting for Pharrell's keeper to show up.
And that is the one that's what stuns me the most, because seeing the Drock and that herky jerky shadowy movement, Everybody remembers that. They're either impressed by it or confused by it.
I went between. You know, I was generally impressed by it. Until I read on Lurker's Guide, this is a mistake, I think, on my part.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I read on Lurker's Guide where they added it because they felt the costume wasn't convincing enough. So they added this effect in to make it a little more creepy. And it was creepy. But then, you know, it's when I started thinking about it, it's like, you know, it looked kind of like a Halloween skull mask on the thing. So, yeah, I can see why they did that. And I had difficulty picking out its lines on occasion. You know,
I didn't have problems with the lines. I had problem with the appearance that it was flowing in between planes of reality or something. That's what that seemed like to me. And that it was just a little, you didn't expect that because their ships didn't do that.
Right.
You know, you had no expectation that was what they looked like, or maybe if he didn't move quite so funnily, it would have been okay.
Yeah, it didn't shamble if maybe he glided in or something.
Ooh, more gliding. That would have been fun.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. I could deal with the fuzziness. It was the herky-jerky walking that kind of was over the top-ish about it.
Yeah. But one of the things that I liked, though, was that, you know, he doesn't even come around the corner and everybody starts reacting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he comes down the hallway and the lights dim. I thought, I actually, you know, it was like, it was so over the top, but it worked. And part of what helped make it work was also, you know, while everybody else is visibly shrinking away from the Drock, Lanier at least tries to maintain, what's the word I want? You know, like he knows there's something really hideously evil about this thing, but even still, in the face of that, he gives it the benefit of the doubt, does the little Lanier bow, you know? I mean, he's still trying to maintain a certain decorum. And I like that. I thought that was a very nice bit of character on Lanier's part, and I think it also, you know, it helped offset that. You know, because Lanier was visibly struggling with doing that. I thought that was a neat little bit.
Yeah.
And I really liked the the irony that Delenn has just fought a war against a foe that promised to be an ally to those who perceive themselves to be downtrodden, i.e. the Shadows and the Centauri. And now here it's happening in our own backyard. You know, because that was Pharrell's whole thing, was that, you know, the religious caste had been pushed out of their homes by the warrior caste.
Mm-hmm.
And who was going to come to their aid? Well, here comes this powerful ally. And, you know, just like Reefa says to Londo, he's like, after this, we won't need him. You know, Pharrell's like, we just have to have him. It'll deter him. We don't mm-hmm. even have to call on him. And Delenn is like, you know, you don't understand. You don't get it. That's not how these people work.
Nope. And that I liked how Lanier figured out what he's
what
like,
I was
you know, because you know, you lost your home. And he's like, Sahadum. And she's like, oh, shit. And that you see it, the distress on her face when it turns around after it hears her name.
Yeah.
And he's like, you're Delenn? Ooh, candy.
Yeah, right. Thanks. See you. Bye.
Mm-hmm. It's like, I got to get going. See you. Bye. And Pharrell's like, no, I didn't tell him who's coming. And she's like, oh. They know my name. They know Sheridan's name. We're marked for life. Thank you for doing this.
Yeah.
The setup of it. I don't know. Why did... Nah, I'm not going to ask that now because that's... It,
go ahead, ask.
Why was Pharrell the only one who had come to her? Like, why didn't he bring more people who had been... You know, whose families had been abused by the warrior caste, she probably would have done something sooner.
Because, if you're thinking about that, there could be a couple of reasons. One could be that he was the only one that managed to sneak off. In other words, even though they were banished and, you know, on death's door, having to trod through the southern wastes in the cold and everything, it's conceivable that the warrior caste are keeping an eye on him, and maybe he's the only one that could get away.
Well, actually, it didn't sound like he was there at all. It's like he went to the town looking for his family, and they were gone. It didn't sound like he made part of that journey.
Really? That was the impression I got.
No, I got the impression that it happened, like his family, part of his family lived there. And they disappeared, and he found out what happened later from the people who survived the journey.
Okay.
That was my impression.
Okay, well, and I will defer to you at that point.
We can discuss that later in feedback.
I'll have to go back and watch it again. I don't have a problem with that.
But I have to ask you this, because when the White Star ships are fighting the Drak ships,
mm-hmm.
what do you make of the Star Trek original series lurching, everybody shift left, everybody shift right.
That was all those scenes. That was my only thought, was this was probably the most Star Trek of any Babylon 5 episode that I've seen.
I honestly cannot remember any other scene in a battle on a White Star. Where
or any ship,
you,
for that matter.
Or any ship, where you see, literally, cast left, cast.
I know.
And they're all leaning in synchrony. I'm like, wait a minute, this was very, very Star Trek-ish. What happened?
Oh, I know. It was just like, I was like, where is this coming from? It really was, it was just like, I don't get what the, you know, and even down, I mean, maybe it was just how the episode had to play out, but even down to Delenn's, you know, sitting there in the captain's chair and Lanier back there, you know, he had the little knob that he was twirling that suddenly appeared on the console.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I guess maybe they're upgrading the White Stars as we go, but that was just like the dopiest thing. I liked the, you know, you wave the hand over the console and you mm-hmm. do something with the other hand. I get that. That's really neat. That's the mysterious Minbari thing. But then there's this like glowing knob. It's just, I don't know.
It surprised me because it came out of nowhere and it was different from the way they had portrayed that kind of motion or reaction in previous episodes. And I just thought that was funny.
Right, right. I'm glad you picked that up, because like I said, that was just like Star Trek.
Yes.
Man.
But yeah, so the both of our heroes, Sheridan and Delenn, are about to embark on dangerous confrontational missions with their respective governments.
Yeah,
all at the same time.
And I loved her comment to Sheridan when she leaves. You know, when she's getting ready to leave, and she goes, "I have to go away for a long time, but I think it's going to be a good thing." And he's like, "What do you mean a good thing?" And she says, "You know what? For you to do what you have to do in front of you, you know," she tells him, "You know, you've been pretending that nothing's different coming back to Sahadum, but things are." And, you know, almost in a way giving credence to things Garibaldi has been saying, which was a very subtle but very nice aspect of the whole thing. But, she says, "I got to go away because you're going to have to become a dangerous person. You're going to have to go to dark places that you won't be able to if I'm around."
Yeah.
You know, without saying it, but implying that he's going to do unsavory things and he doesn't want her to see him in that light.
Possibly. Or she doesn't want him to have to hold back because of what he thinks she might think of him when she sees him doing it.
That's what I was trying to
say. Basically.
Precisely.
But we know that she's capable of the same thing. So they bid each other a fond farewell and turn their full-on attention to their respective homeworld problems. And as we see, we're going to see very, very soon, those intentions turn to wrath and, oh my goodness, everybody duck.
Yeah. Well, I like Glenn's comment to Sheridan. She says, "You know, it pleases me that you like what I've become, but never forget what I was and what I'm capable of." And we see that when she faces off against the Drak.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even after the bogus Star Trek moves and all the rest, the whole point is, you know, it even harkens back to Delenn at first contact with the humans.
It does.
You know, which is the irony, of course. You know, she tells Lanier, "You know, I've already screwed up one first contact. I'm not going to do it again." And she doesn't really, but she does call on that. It's like, you know, they attacked us without provocation. You know, they're up to no good. They need to be taught a lesson.
Cool.
The end. So,
any thoughts, Brad?
No, not a bit. Unfortunately, I didn't get a chance to rewatch it before recording.
I'm just surprised that Tim has no memory of watching this episode. We're going to have to discuss that later, but right now we are done with our deep geeking. We're going to take a really, really quick break and come back with some closing comments.
Year one.
If you could have any of Jane's t-shirts, which one would you want?
And this here Sarah and Ant now. And she's in the full service
now. I keep them in the hand forces. Year two.
Dear Dr. Kim.
Well,
what should I do?
Come with this.
We're going to live.
That guy's got a pool on his ass. Oh, jeez, that is hilarious.
Year three.
The verse just
so
happened.
I says to him, I says,
"Using it would
I
make break an atmo mighty floaty.
You have that suit ready for Mr. Badger Bar tomorrow, or you will become intimately acquainted with my associate here, Mr. Lead Pipe, and the serve of pain, agony, and pain."
Now, the signal is back for a bigger and better fourth season.
This is the place. We'll buy you the time.
Hold. Hold till I get back.
It is a way of life for thousands of strangers who, like Serenity's crew, bonded to become something more than themselves, a family, with a mission to keep the fire cybers alive.
Welcome back to the signal!
Yes, welcome back. It is... We had our little bit of time off, and we are back, season 4, going strong.
I can't wait. Find us at www.serenityfirefly.com.
And we're back to wrap this thing up. I actually have a little announcement.
Uh-oh.
This actually is only going to benefit the people in the live feed because this sale... Well, actually, I can post it on the website. The Across Time and Space, The Chronologies of Babylon 5 went on sale today. And you can, if you order it by Tuesday, September 16th, you'll get $10 off.
There we go.
So you go to Babylon5scripts.com. It's first authorized chronology, and I'm going to read this here. Contains two complete chronologies. Terry Jones's Babylon 5 historical database, parts of which were previously published in the official B5 magazine, and I. Mark Carlson's Timeline of the Babylon 5 Crusade Universe. Together, these two documents give a... What's the word? I have to scroll down to read it. These two documents are the only sources that give you a complete picture of the Babylon 5 universe and how it fits in the history of the world. It contains important Babylon 5 canon buried in the novels, comics, books, and short stories. And I know because I helped them dig out some of the stuff that was in the novels. What's even more important, they've updated it to include Lost Tales.
Ooh.
Yes. And there's a lot of information in here that literally a lot of people haven't seen because it was only in the magazines, and the magazines have been out of print for a long time. And, Fiona Avery, reference editor for B5 and Crusade, has written an introduction to it.
Yeah,
so everybody rush out and go get that. It matches nicely with the set of the rest of your B5 scripts. You don't have to worry about that. I think it's kind of... What is that color?
Well, it's some weird green.
Yeah, it's like an army green, kind of.
Yeah.
Like an army green, I'm going to say.
Yeah.
But yes, that book is out. Thank you for reminding me, Mr. Jim Carr. Go play. Go order it. Save yourself $10 if you order it by Tuesday the 16th.
Now, you got your own free copy, didn't you?
I will be getting my own free copy, yes.
For being a contributor, good.
Yes, I will bring that in as soon as it's in my hot little hands.
There you go. Now see, you don't get to look at the script for World War Z, but you do get to be involved with the official chronology for the Babylon 5
years. Yep.
So you know what, I think that's a pretty good trade.
Yes.
Okay, well since you even touched on the live feed, let me read this quick email here.
Mm-hmm.
This will have no meaning to anyone except anyone who's been in the live feed. This is from James in Dallas. Greetings, B5 crew. I have a comment about something said on the live feed. Michael, if I understand correctly, you don't want sausage in your Jell-O, but you do like melons and peaches with Jell-O. thanks for the fun, both on and off the air.
Okay.
I got nothing.
I'm trying to remember conversation.
I know exactly what it was about. It's not appropriate for this show. I will tell you when we stop recording.
Yeah, we are trying to maintain a certain semblance of decorum here.
Is yes.
Okay.
Yes. Okay. I will remind him.
See, this Fair is what enough. You miss when you miss the live
yes.
feed.
Yeah. Now, we know not everybody can tune in for live feed, but even still, if you get a chance.
Hey, even if you can't tune in to the live feed, you can go into Second Life and listen there.
Yeah.
That's it.
Now, Michael, we have a voicemail. Can you play that for us, please?
I sure can.
Excellent.
Hey, Babylon Podcast. It is Arco, host of the Geek of All Trades podcast. Now, having finally added the Babylon podcast to my speed dial so I can call a little more often than I have been. Anyway, listening to the last show that just dropped into the iTunes feed, and Summer was talking about the book for the TV movies, and, you know, it's a shame that A Call to Arms wasn't one of the movies offered up for questions, because I did have a question in mind for that one. And that is, where did you dredge up the guy who did the score for that movie and later for Crusade? The Learning Annex? Yeah, that music was truly horrible. I mean, I can understand if you couldn't get Christopher Franke back, but couldn't you have found anybody better? I mean, really.
Oh, really? That's kind of interesting. I'm going to... The gentleman's name, if it is indeed the same guy who scored Call to Arms... as he did the Crusades, the series.
Evan Chen?
Yeah, Evan Chen is the composer. And I will have you know that I did buy the soundtrack for Crusade. I'm probably one of like 12 people that did.
I didn't know it was out, but I thought the music was superb.
Yeah, the music was a shift from what Babylon 5 was, but it wasn't bad. It was literally, if you listen to the soundtrack for Crusade, there are elements in there that you can see that over time have morphed into what Bear McCreary has done with Galactica. Just some of small parts of it, not a lot, but because like overall different tonalities and everything, but you can tell that he was going for something. And in a lot of stuff, a lot of parts of the scores, it really worked. And let me tell you something. The music that was composed as the background music for Eilerson's Porno was hilarious.
You know, it could have been worse. Toto isn't busy right
hey,
now.
Hey, hey. No Toto in space. That's just scary. But no, I will strongly disagree with Arkel, because I thought the music for Crusade was very, very different. It was a bold move. And I can see where not a lot of people would like it, but I enjoyed it. I didn't.
I remember at the time on the chat rooms and so forth that was a very polarizing issue. I mean, it was really, I want to say almost a 50-50 split from what I can remember. That might be a bit of an exaggeration, but it was love it or hate it. There was nobody on the fence about it.
Yeah, it was. And literally, if you get that kind of split where somebody, you either you have people who love it and people who hate it, there's no middle ground, that's actually a sign you're doing something good. You know, there's no room for people to be wishy-washy about it.
Right, yeah. So, totally agree.
So Arkel, anyway. I disagree with you, bud.
Yeah. All right, well, that's pretty much it. Things are light for feedback, so please, people, start sending the stuff.
Is next week a feedback-a-palooza?
You know what? We don't have enough material, believe it or not.
We will keep going. I know Jeffrey had been working on some potential interviews. We're still trying to track down a few other people.
I've got a lead that I need to follow up on that I've been lax on, so we'll see what we have to that.
Yes, we are working on more stuff. But for that, I guess we are done for today.
Yep. Brad, did you have something you were going to say?
Oh, I said, has Gary been slacking off on his calling in?
Yeah, apparently, we have not intrigued Gary enough. He has not been leaving us 5 voicemails a week.
Yeah.
But
that's because Gary's broke after for all the donating. He can't afford his internet connection anymore.
Oh no!
No.
He can record. He can record little snippets and then dial up and email them to us.
Between Tim and Gary, they are single-handedly keeping these shows going, folks.
Golf clap for Darcy's dad and Gary.
No kidding. Big kudos to them.
And if you want to help out by also donating, go to our website, babylonpodcast.com. There's a big orange donate button. Help us upgrade so we can help Tim upgrade eventually. We hope.
One day.
If you want to leave some feedback, you can send an email in to babylonpodcast@gmail.com or call in that voicemail number. Call into the voicemail line. That number is 206-338-2259. That's 206-338-2259.
The year the Great War came upon us all.
And we'll see you next time on the other side of the virtual avatar world.